Thanks to the congregation for joining in. Sometime when a song's not too familiar, people just kind of close down, but it's obvious that you were singing out from all your heart, and that's encouraging to me. I thank God this morning, before I came, for those with whom I'd have the privilege of worshiping, who would encourage me and strengthen me by what they contribute to the service, and I do thank God for you. We have a number of visitors with us this morning. We have some gospel preachers and elders of the church and various ones. I'll not undertake to name all by any means, or any even this morning, but we do want you to know that as visitors you're welcome, and as members of this congregation you're a blessing to be here. I've enjoyed this past week. I mentioned before I left that I was preaching in an area where I had done some of my very first preaching years ago. I don't find any delight in getting older. But I won't say I don't find any delight, because there are some delights about it. There's some privileges. When I first went to this part of Alabama nearly 50 years ago, I met an older man, even then, who loved the Lord and was trying to serve him, had a big family, a lot of girls particularly. And those girls, I think only two boys, but a whole lot of girls. And they generally married good men, and they've had large families. And to see the influence of that good man, which extends throughout that little congregation where I was preaching, see his children, his grandchildren, great-grandchildren serving the Lord, it just reminds me of what a man can do for future generations. Not only a man, but a good woman too, and I ought to stress that. A man and a good woman can do to influence future generations through their offspring. The Lord said that he would bless the righteous to the third and fourth generation. I've seen that. And I think that each of us should aspire to build into our children, our grandchildren, insofar as possible, the faith that we have received by the grace of God through the revelation of the gospel of Jesus Christ, which is the power of God and the salvation of everyone that believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. I suppose that many, and particularly I, are aware of the fact that this past week was the week when income tax had to be put in. Now, some of you, I'm sure, did yours early in the year, got that behind you, but I never do that. It's always the last minute, and I think one reason is I just hate it so much. I just despise it, and I'm sure that most of you find it very, very difficult to endure. When I get my tax return finished, in one way I can't wait, and yet the other way I just don't want to see what I'm going to have to pay. And it always is more than I thought it was going to be, somehow or other, and I just cringe, and I despise it. But you know, government doesn't mind. That's all right. It doesn't make a bit of difference to them how I feel about it. Just as long as I get that check in the mail on the 15th, and this year is 17th, that was a little bit of mercy, but just as long as it gets in the mail, they don't care how I hate it, they don't care how I despise it, they don't have to care how grudgingly it's given, just as long as it comes in. But in the kingdom of God, it's different. God is not nearly concerned about the check as he is the attitude that we have as we give what we give. It's the attitude that counts. Now, the Pharisees and the Sadducees had that idea of the kingdom of God as being something of externals. To them, the important thing was how much you give. But Jesus said in Matthew 5:20, except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you will in no wise enter the kingdom of God. And then he proceeded in that chapter to talk about the fact that it was not enough just to avoid overt sin. Your attitude has to be right. Your motivation for the good you do has to be proper. And you don't even dream of sin. And if you dream of sin, he says it's the same as if you went on and committed the sin. There's a wonderful illustration, I think, of this principle in the 12th chapter of the book of Mark. If you'd like to turn, we're going to read just three or four verses from this chapter. Only twice in the Gospels is this event recorded. It's recorded by Luke in almost the same words, and also by Mark. Mark 12, beginning with verse 41.
Now Jesus sat opposite the treasury and saw how the people put money into the treasury. And many who were rich put in much. Then one poor widow came and threw in two mites, which make a quadrants. So he called his disciples to him and said to them, "Assuredly I say to you that this poor widow has put in more than all those who have given to the treasury. For they all put in out of their abundance, but she out of her poverty put in all that she had, her whole livelihood." I'd like for us to consider four people or groups and individuals who were present on this occasion. In the first place, I want to talk for a moment about those rich who put in much. I don't know for sure who they were, but it's very probable that they were some of these scribes and Pharisees who had been mentioned earlier in this chapter and much more fully in Matthew 23, which is the same setting. They were wealthy. They were proud, supposing that their wealth was given to them by God as a token of His approval of them. And so they were not only proud of their wealth, but they were proud of the standing that this indicated between them and God. If these were the scribes and Pharisees, and I assume they were, then they may very well have been giving for the purpose of being seen of men, because Jesus said that that was their character. Back in the sixth chapter of the book of Matthew, also in the Sermon on the Mount, to which we referred a moment ago, he said in verse 2, "When you do a charitable deed, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory from men. Assuredly, I say unto you, they have their reward." They were seeking the honor of men. And Jesus said, when they receive honor from men, that's all they can expect, because they have gotten what they were working for. Now, in addition to the honor that men would give them for these great gifts and the pride that they might feel and the fact that they had given so much, there was also the possibility that they were anxious to have a large collection because of what they could get out of it, what use they could make of it. They were in control in the temple. And it seems interesting that in both this location and in Luke, this statement of Jesus concerning this widow comes just after he had said something about these scribes and Pharisees. If you still in Mark, the 12th chapter, look back up at verse 38. He said to them in his teaching, "Beware of the scribes who desire to go around in long robes, love greetings in the marketplace, the best seats in the synagogues, and the best places of the feasts." And then look at verse 40. "Who devour widows' houses and for a pretense make long prayers, these will receive greater condemnation." Now, you may have been thinking primarily about their taking widows' homes away from them because maybe of indebtedness or something of that kind. But there's also the possibility, because of the proximity here, that they were taking even what a poor widow would put into the treasury and using it to their own advantage and for their own benefit. That sometimes has been done. I think sometimes when I hear preachers preaching, they think that the whole purpose of giving is to support them, to take care of them, pay their expenses, to make it possible for them to live in a lavish kind of lifestyle. Regardless of that, as these rich people put in all of this that they put in, and they put in gold and silver and some very valuable pieces of money, they did not really receive any credit from the Lord. No commendation whatsoever. God simply was not concerned with what they were doing in any positive way. Well, let's look at another group. The disciples were here watching. And I don't know what they were looking at as far as the money, but apparently they really didn't have their mind on what was being contributed. Because their mind must have been on the beautiful building they were in. And I'll tell you why I think that in just a moment. You know, the temple was a majestic building. It was really the most beautiful building probably in all that part of the world. It had been built at great expense in the first place, and by this time Herod had spent more than 40 years refurbishing it, rebuilding it, with a huge number of slaves and a great expenditure of money, and there were huge stones in it. It was a magnificent building. And beside the building, which really itself was rather small,
There were some fine courts, though, around it, and a plaza there with porches where thousands and thousands of people could gather. And it was in a very important spot on a hill where it could just be seen from all directions. It was a jewel of the whole East. And it's just impossible, I guess, to go into a building like that without just being awestruck. I can remember a few buildings in which I have been privileged to sit for a little while, where I think I could just about spend all day long just sitting there and gazing at the beautiful art that's there. And some people think that's the way a building ought to be, that's for the glory of God. But if we're not careful, a building can actually take our mind away from what we're doing. And it's real interesting that just as soon as this comment by Jesus was finished, verse 1 of the next chapter says, as he went out of the temple, one of his disciples said to him, "Teacher, see what manner of stones and what buildings are here." Jesus answered and said to him, "Do you see these great buildings? Not one stone shall be left upon another that shall not be thrown down." They were awestruck by the building. But then there is the widow. And she's an interesting character indeed. What can we say about this widow? Well, there's some negative things I think we could say. In the first place, I don't think she was thinking about making some kind of a show, making an impression on other people by the amount that she was giving. And probably people saw it. And Jesus could have known what she was giving without actually seeing it. In fact, we see his omniscience indicated by the fact that he knew how much these rich people had left over, and he knew that this woman had given everything. But in that particular portion of the building, which would have been a court, the women's court, we're told that there were 13 boxes to receive contributions. And those contributions were given to various purposes. They apparently were dedicated to different things so that you could put your money in any one of those. But they were called trumpets because they were shaped like that. And if you wanted to put something in, you put it up there so that everybody really could see, because there'd be no way to hide it as you put it in the little top. I wondered a little if that had something to do with the sounding of the trumpets before them, though that does not necessarily follow. But it could be seen. And when she put in her two mites, I don't think she was expecting somebody to say, "Wow, look what a gift this woman has given." If that's what she was expecting, she certainly didn't get it, though we're sure that was not it. I don't think as she contributed this money, she was thinking about all of these old, nasty, rich people around me. If she'd been thinking about these really rich people and how much they had to give, she probably would have given anything. In fact, I've known of people who say, "I'm not going to give anything. Let those rich people do it." I don't think that she was thinking about the hypocrisy of those who might use this money. Wonder how they're going to use this money that I give. I don't think she was thinking about her own needs. If she had been thinking about her own needs, I don't believe she would have given what she gave. We've been told that this was worth about a penny. And I don't know, somehow I haven't really been able to identify. That hasn't quite satisfied me, because I can kind of understand why she might go on and put in a penny. Most people these days won't even stop to pick up one. And if she was hungry, what would a penny do for her? But really, if you put it into the context of a day's wage in that time, it probably was about $2. It was as much as $2. And if she had $2 and didn't have anything else, you'd surely expect her to say, "Well, I better keep this back. Nothing else, I can go to McDonald's and get a value meal." No, you can't get one for $2, I don't believe, but there's some place you could get a 99-cent hamburger, maybe a Champs or something. But this $2, I can at least get me something to eat. But I don't really think she was thinking about her needs at all. I don't believe she was thinking about a reward that she would receive from it. Now, the Scriptures teach that generosity is rewarded. The Scriptures teach that as a man sows, that shall he also reap. And that's said particularly with reference to our giving of material things. "He that soweth to the flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, but he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting." It also is said that he that sows bountifully shall reap also bountifully. This teaching is in the Old Testament as well as what we have, which I've been quoting, from the New Testament. I don't think, though, that she was making an investment in the sense of hoping to get back more than she put in, like some people do when they buy a lottery ticket. I don't think that's what she had in mind. The fact is, I don't think she was thinking about herself at all. I think she just lost sight of herself and her needs and her poverty and how her money might be used. She had just lost sight of herself completely. Well, what was she thinking about? It may well be that she was thinking about the work being done. If these trumpets were indeed labeled and she knew where the money was going, and incidentally, this giving was apparently voluntary, and I think that's important. It wasn't something required like the tithes, and this wasn't a tithing operation. If there's been a tithing operation, she'd have failed. She didn't give 10%. She gave 100%. But if these things were labeled, then she must have been thinking about the good that would be done, and that's in order. Some of this was used, apparently, for this refurbishing of the temple, and maybe she was interested in seeing the temple refurbished. It's possible that some of this would go to the poor. Some of this would go to buying sacrifices. Some of it would go to other things. And she must have been thinking about the good that would be accomplished. And you know, that's one of the beauties of treasury giving. Sometimes we can go either direction. We can overemphasize the idea of treasury work and underemphasize the importance of personal contributions. On the other hand, we can emphasize personal contributions to the point that we forget that the Lord really had in mind a treasury so that we all could combine what we have and do the work. If this woman just, say, was interested in the refurbishing of the temple and felt that it should be done, how far would $2 go on a building project? Nothing at all. But if she pointed with what others did, then that work could be done. And I think it makes it possible, in one sense, for every individual in a church, if we may bring it on down to local, to modern times, it makes it possible for every individual to have a part in whatever great work the church does. I couldn't personally send Carrie Keenan to Romania, much as I'd like to. I couldn't do it. But I can give what I can give toward sending him there. And you can give what you can give. And if it's no more than $1, then that's participating. And when it's put together, then I think the identity of it, in a sense, is lost. And each of us, whether we've been able to give $1 or whether we've been able to give $50 or $100 or whatever we've been able to give, we can feel, I had a part in that good work. And I think she was thinking about that. But I rather suspect that her mind went beyond the project. I really just believe she had a devotion to God. I believe she was concerned for expressing her love for God when she did what she did. I am not sure. Well, I hear from time to time the suggestion made when we're contributing that we're giving this in order to carry on the work of this church. And that certainly is true. There's nothing untrue about that. But if that's all that's involved, then I don't know that I want to contribute a lot. There's nothing about the work of the church that means as much to me as God and my gift to Him. Now, the only way I can give to God, I think, is by giving to someone who is in need or by giving to the work that is being done by the church. But the primary thing is not to bring glory to this assembly. It's not to be able to say, look how many preachers we're supporting, or look how we're expanding our parking lot, or look how what we're doing in our building, or look at the figures on the board. If that's all we're interested in, then there's no difference in that in giving $1,000 to the Civitan Club or the Lions Club and so we can boast about the fact that we put glasses on so many blind children. The object of our giving is God. We love God because of what He has done for us, and we're giving to Him. And I believe really that's what was primary in this woman's life. Love is expressed best in giving. I think all boys who are courting a girl, if they really love her, understand that. And if they don't, the girl does. she knows that if he's not willing to make some sacrifice for her, to give her something from time to time, to note the fact that she has a birthday, or to note the fact that it's 1 year since we had our first date, or something of the kind, then she doesn't think he cares much for her. Love is expressed in giving. And how do you give to God? You can't, and this of course is ridiculous, but you can't invent some kind of a rocket that will send him a check for $1,000, blow it up into the atmosphere. You can't do that. No way. And Jesus is not here on earth, so you can invite him home with you for dinner or put a $50 bill in his pocket as he passes by. How are you going to give to the Lord? Well, Jesus, of course, said, and you're familiar with this, in Matthew 25, "Inasmuch as you did it to the one of these, the least of my brethren, you did it unto me." And when we contribute, we are giving to the Lord. And I believe that that is what should be paramount in our mind. We sing a song sometime, and I appreciate Brother Willis is leading it. It's 611, if you'd like to look at it. And I'd like to read the words so that next time we sing it, perhaps it will mean a little more to us. 611. "We give thee but thine own." In other words, whatever we give really belongs to you, whatever the gift may be. "All that we have is thine alone, a trust, O Lord, from thee. May we thy bounties thus as stewards true receive, and gladly, as thou blessest us, to thee our first fruits give. And we believe thy word, though dim our faith may be. Whate'er we do for thine, O Lord, for your people, we do it unto thee." This woman must have had that in mind. She must also have trusted God. I marvel at the statement of Jesus, "Give us this day our daily bread." You know, if we had nothing more to worry about than today's bread and today's clothing and today's shelter, we wouldn't have anything to worry about, would we? Our concerns, our anxieties are for tomorrow's bread and tomorrow's shelter. This woman couldn't anticipate tomorrow. She had today, and she had sufficient for today. And so what she had, she gave to the Lord. Now, the other person, of course, that we want to mention is Jesus. What was Jesus doing? Well, he certainly was not thinking about the buildings. Jesus didn't put much emphasis on that. In fact, as we've observed already, he said, well, just shortly, one stone is not going to be left on top of another. He wasn't concerned with the surroundings, the building. And I don't even think that the Lord was judging these wealthy people who put in large amounts of money. I don't think Jesus was sitting there saying, now why didn't he put in more? You know, the only person I know of in all the scriptures who was told to give all that he had was that rich young ruler. And that was simply to demonstrate the fact that he really didn't love the Lord as he should with all his heart, soul, mind, and strength. In other passages, we're told that each one is to give according as he has purposed in his heart, or that we give as we've been prospered. I think we ought to think about that. But at the same time, I don't believe Jesus was judging these people because they didn't give everything they had. But what was Jesus doing? It's my judgment that the Lord, sitting here watching, was not watching to see how much, so he could praise those who put in a lot of money and condemn those who put in a little. That's what he'd been doing. He wouldn't have had much to say for this woman because she didn't put in much. But Jesus, as the King of the kingdom of heaven, was looking at hearts. That's what he was looking at. He was looking at the hearts of the people, the attitude that was behind their giving. And we've already said that that's paramount, that's basic in the kingdom of God. You know, back in the Old Testament, there's such a beautiful statement to me in Micah, the 6th chapter, beginning with verse 6. "With what shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before the high God? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams or 10,000 rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? He has shown you, O man, what is good, And what does the Lord require of you but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God? I believe Jesus was watching these contributions, looking into the heart of those that gave, looking for someone who did justly, who loved mercy, and was humble. And he didn't see that in those who were giving the great gifts. But here came this woman who put in only 2 mites, only a couple of dollars, and he saw in her what he was looking for. He was looking at the giver rather than looking at the gift. He was seeking devotion from the heart rather than gold from the pocket. You know, I believe that when we gave this morning, Jesus was watching. I have no doubt at all that he was watching. And I don't think he was looking nearly so much at how much we were giving as he was looking for a truly unselfish, dedicated, humble heart. And the interesting question to me is, did he see one? Did he see one? I'm inclined to believe that he saw several in this assembly this morning. I believe that he saw several who, out of love for him, in the trust of him, out of gratitude to him for what he has done, gave not simply their money, but gave themselves. There's some songbooks that leave out some of the best verses, I think, of At the Cross. And we sing that song sometime and we get so thrilled with the singing of it, it just moves along and we think how good we sound, and I think we just miss so much that's in it. You remember the first verse, "Alas, and did my Savior bleed, and did my Sovereign die? Would he devote that sacred head for such a worm as I? Was it for crimes that I had done he groaned upon a tree? Amazing pity, grace unknown, and love beyond degree. Well might the sun in darkness hide, shut his glories in, when Christ, the mighty Maker, died for man, the creature, sin. Thus might I hide my blushing face when his dear cross appears, dissolve my heart in thankfulness, and melt mine eyes to tears. But drops of grief can ne'er repay the debt of love I owe. Here, Lord, I give myself away. 'Tis all that I can do." Let me tell you, my friend, that's what the Lord's looking for. He's looking for people who will give themselves away. Now, as I've said, I believe there's some in this assembly who have done that this morning. And what you have given in the way of money has been what you could give. I think you've saved some if you truly love the Lord, so that you can help some poor person tomorrow or Tuesday or Wednesday. I don't think for a moment that everything is to be put into the treasury here. You want to save something perhaps to buy some good books, good literature, whatever. But the question, the whole question is not how much did we give. It may not all together be how much we left over. But the question was, did we give ourselves? And was what we gave given out of love for the Lord and in trust that he would care for us and keep us and provide for us what we need, even though we may have contributed much of what we do have, at least presently, to give to him? But when I ask myself, did he see someone in this audience giving himself? The next question I ask is, was it I? Was it me he saw giving myself to him? Was I thinking maybe about the brethren that count the contribution and what they would think about my check? I don't have that responsibility, and I'm thankful I don't. One or two of our deacons serve in that regard, and we appreciate what they do. But the big question is not, what will the brethren think when they're counting the contribution? My thought should not be that I want a more comfortable building or something that will minister to pride, or even to be proud of the fact that I have given so much in comparison with what others have given. But the question is, was it a gift of love? Was there that element of sacrifice in it that would suggest love? I thought sometime when there's an appeal that goes out because of people who have lost everything in a flood or in a fire, it's so easy for us to go back to our closet and take out those clothes that are completely outmoded, those clothes that are no longer in style, pack them up in a box and send them off to somebody because we weren't going to use them anyway. There's no real love there. Love is shown when we take something that we love, appreciate, something we like, something that we treasure, and say, here, I want you to have this. It means something to me, but I want you to have it. That's when love is shown. And when we merely reach in our pocket and pull out whatever loose change may be there, or give the Lord whatever's left over after we have done all of the shopping we want to do, have done all of the sports activities that we want to engage in, we've gone to all the recreational functions that we want to go to, we've obtained all the entertainment facilities that we can get for our house, we've got everything we want, then whatever's left we give to the Lord. There is no sacrifice, therefore there is no real expression of love there. Have I made a sacrifice for the Lord this morning? But more than that, have I given Him myself? 2 Corinthians, the 8th chapter, speaks about those Macedonians whom Paul approached for a gift for the poor saints in Judea. And he says that they gave according to their power. Yes, and even beyond their power, just like this woman did. More than you would think she was able to give. Why? Because first, he says, 2 Corinthians 8:5, they gave their own selves to the Lord. That's what God is looking for. Well, there may be somebody say, I feel pretty good about this. I gave the widow's mite this morning. I guess that has been the most misused statement in all the Bible. Gave the widow's mite. Yeah, I gave my $10. Well, how much did you have left over? The widow didn't have anything left over. Now, if any of us ever come to really bring everything we have, even if it's $10,000, and that's all we have, we don't have anything left, then we can say that's the widow's mite. Oh, but that's a lot. It was not the amount. That's the point that's being made. It was not the amount. It was the dedication that was behind it. I've known of some people that mortgaged their homes for the cause of Christ, for something that needed to be done. I knew one brother that had nothing more to give, and he sold his car and bought the money. Now we're getting closer to the widow's mite. He still had some other things, but we're getting closer. The widow's mite is what we give when it's all. It's not wrong to have something left. Remember that. But the question is, would we be willing to give everything to the Lord? In conclusion, I want to note one interesting fact. Jesus commented on what this woman had done, but he didn't say anything to her. He said what he said to his disciples. Someone has raised the question, what would it have meant to her if Jesus had said something to her? If he said, lady, you've given more than all these other people have given today. Is it possible she might have been puffed up with pride a little bit? Is it possible, particularly if she became a believer in Christ, that for the rest of her life she would be proud of the fact that Jesus said, I gave more than... Maybe Jesus felt that might be dangerous. And so apparently he didn't say anything to her at all. You know, one of the things I've appreciated about this congregation and have told other people about is the fact that there is so much encouragement that we give to those whose work we observe. If a person leads a prayer, nearly always someone says, appreciated your prayer. Or if we lead a song, or if we make announcements, or whatever, commendation is given. And I think that's good. Paul commended good, but there's a danger that we may get a little proud about that. And if nobody says anything to me about it, maybe a couple of times I lead prayer, well then, well, I just don't want to lead prayer anymore. Or I don't want to lead singing anymore. It's the positive, I mean, it's these public things that get attention. And many times while we thank those who lead prayers or those who preach sermons, and you certainly encourage me along that line, and I'm grateful for it, but we encourage those things, whereas there are widows, there are singles, there are women, and young people, teenagers, who may actually be worthy of more praise than we who may do something publicly. And if our attitude becomes such that we have to be praised, we have to be commended, we have to be seen, and that's possible to get that way. Just like a child who is always praised for everything gets to where he expects that. And gets, we say, gets spoiled. And it's possible for us to get spoiled to that, so that we want to do the things that are visible and the things that will bring our commendation, and we don't want to do those things that may be quite... What this woman did, Jesus never even mentioned to her. But he sure mentioned it to his disciples. And one day, he'll take note of what that woman did. And all the world will know. Of course, we know now. We honor her, but we don't know her name. But we honor her, and she's been a blessing to us by the example that she gave. But one day, she'll hear if her life was consistent with what she did. We can believe it was. Well done, good and faithful servant. That'll be worth all the more than any commendation that any human being could give. The commendation will come later. Those who gave to be seen of men had the reward. But Jesus said, when you pray, or when you give alms, he really said in Matthew 6, 3 and 4, let not your left hand know what the right hand does, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly. What we're asking this morning is not that you be baptized. That shocked you, didn't it? That's the way we usually wind it up. If we can assist you in baptism, you come and let us know. I'm not primarily concerned in baptizing you this morning. What I'm eager to do, more than any other thing, is to encourage you to give yourself to God. Now, if you determine that you're going to give yourself to the Lord, the first thing you'll want to do, most certainly, is to be born again as a child of God. What you'll want more than any other thing is to enter into a relationship with God and into Jesus Christ. You and Him and He and you. And that's accomplished through baptism. But there have been a lot of people baptized who didn't give themselves. And we don't want to baptize anybody like that. The only people we want to baptize are those who have crucified the old man and are burying him in the watery grave to be raised by the Lord as a new person to live for Him forever. Is there someone who will respond this morning as we stand and sing?